Over breakfast at the hotel, Marshal Tom Riley stared in disbelief at the words the brothers told him. Halfway through his eggs, young Parley ran in and whispered in Tom's ear.
I gotta see it to believe it. Come on, boys.
On the front porch of the hotel, the men watched as all the gunfighters from the Flying BS rode into town and reined up in front of the Carlin house.
Looks like Full meant every word he said. And he was right about John hiring those bad ones as soon as Bull fired them. I applaud Bull for trying to end this years-long war, but he may have committed suicide by doing it.
Let's take a walk over to the Carlin house. The conversation should be quite lively.
That's one way of putting it.
Inside Carlin house, the line of gunmen at the bar and seated at tables were a sullen-faced lot. Bartender George looked awfully nervous. Tom Riley walked straight up to Ben Connors, while Sam and Matt separated to better watch the room filled with some of the most notorious gunmen in the West. Parley stood to the right of the Batwings. The deputy was young, but he had more than his share of sand.
Make my day a delightful one, and tell me you boys are pulling out.
Sorry to disappoint you, Marshal, but as of 10 o'clock last night, more or less, we all went to work for the Circle JC spread. Bull suddenly got religion or some such crap as that.
What did his kids think about that?
Why don't you ask them, Marshal? I've never been one to carry tales. You care for a taste of who hit John?
Connors lifted his shot glass.
It's a little early for me, Ben.
Man should never refuse free drink, Marshal. Never know when it might be his last one.
I could take that as a threat, Ben.
But you won't, because it ain't.
Tom knew there was no point in pressing this gunfighter for details of what might be around the bend, or any of the other gun handlers in the room, for that matter. All he could do was wait. But he could put a crimp in their conversation and gently push just a bit. Tom called for a pot of coffee and cups and took a table. Matt and Sam and the young deputy joined him. They all noticed that George was very nervous as he set the tray on the table. His eyes looked haunted.
George is scared out of his wits. He's overheard something.
Yeah. But you'll never get anything out of him. He's John Carlin's man all the way. Look at him. Must be 25 or 30 of the randiest old boys west of the Mississippi in this room. Each man has 10 to 50 dead men behind him. And here we sit, like bumps on a log, not able to do nothing.
Three men, all of them looking to be in their 30s, stepped in. They were slightly bow-legged and their clothing trail-worn. They did not wear their guns like gunfighters, but carried them more like tools.
Punchers. On the drift looking for work.
The cowboys walked to the bar.
Three beers. We're looking for work. Anybody around these parts hiring?
A smart man would drift.
Well, I ain't never been known for my smarts. I'm just looking for work, not trouble.
Try the Flying BS.
The cowboy turned to look at the marshal.
The what?
Take the southwest fork at the hotel. It's not too far out of town. Man's name is Bull Sutton. He's hiring, so I hear.
Much obliged, Marshal.
One of the young gunslicks looked at the trio of working cowboys.
Would you boys take a good look at them three saddle bums? This is going to be as easy as target practice.
One of the cowboys, a short, stocky man with flame red hair and freckles, looked at the gunslick.
I ain't no hand with a short gun, sonny boy. But any time you want to try me with fists, you just come on and throw your best punch.
You boys finish your beers and walk on across the street to Bull's Den if you want another drink. Or ride on out to Bull's Spread.
Tom looked at the loudmouth gun handler.
As for you, you shut your goddamn mouth.
Damn saddlebum challenged me.
He challenged you to fists. You want it, step up and toe the line. You pull iron on that puncher and I'll shoot you myself.
The young punk looked down at his shot glass, but he shut up.
Hey, Red, the beer's on me.
Thanks, friend. My name's Rusty, but you probably figured that out already.
Matt Bodine.
Pleased. This here's Hicks, and the skinny one is Slim. Back when I was just a youngster, I rode right up on a band of Cheyenne, like to scare the bejesus out of me. I had a horse going lame and about 10 cartridges in my belt. This real regal-looking man rode up even with me and said, "Your horse is tired and you look hungry. You come with us." Well, I sure figured I didn't have no choice in the matter. Come to find out, that was Medicine Horse. And he and them others was just out hunting game, not trouble. They fed me right, we swapped horses, and his son was with that bunch. And a white boy, too. Both of them about 8 or 9 years old. That would be Bodine and you, Mr. Toothless.
I remember. The women were fascinated by your red hair. You had nothing to fear. My father and those who followed him never harmed a white man who was friendly with them.
Ain't that sweet? Makes me want to puke. I figure the only good engine's a dead one.
Sam pushed back his chair and stood up.
You want to try to make this Indian a dead one?
Tom opened his mouth.
Stay out of it, Tom. This is none of your affair.
Get up. Get up and let Iron back up your big mouth.
No damn breed talks to me like that!
Then shut my mouth, you know how. Let's see if you can.
The other gun hands waited, all of them being careful to keep their hands in sight. Not out of fear, simply following the unwritten code of the time. A man saddles his own horses and stomps on his own snakes.
Like stealing a cookie from a baby.
Yeah, I'm sure you'd know all about that.
The self-proclaimed gunfighter grabbed for his guns, his face shiny with sweat and his eyes wild. Sam's hand flashed. The gunman never got his .45 clear of leather. He swayed, shot in the chest, then lifted his .45 from leather. With blood leaking from his mouth, he leveled the Colt. Sam shot him again, the big .44 slug taking him in the belly and doubling him over. The kid rocked back on his boot heels and sat down hard on the floor. The .45 dropped from his hand.
I don't believe it. A damn engine beat me to the draw.
He fell over as the white-hot pain struck him hard. No one made a move to help the dying man. No one did anything with their hands except keep them still. Doc Blaine had heard the shots and came on a run, as did the mortician and his helper. Doc knelt down and tried to unbutton the man's bloody shirt. The kid pushed his hands away.
Just as well.
Ooh, about 5'9". I think we have one that will do nicely. You have any money?
I want a gospel shouter to pray over me.
Sam reloaded, then turned his back to the dying man and started walking toward the bat wings. Gene Baker shoved back his chair and stood up.
By God, I'll not let this go unavenged. Turn around and face me, you goddamn greasy engine!
Baker was dragging Iron as he spoke. Sam drew as he turned. Other gunnies pulled pistols, and Matt and Tom and young Carly did the same. Doc Blaine, the Undertaker, and his helper flattened out on the floor. George hit the boards behind the bar, crouching behind a barrel of beer. Gene Baker took a .44 just below the throat and was flung backward by the shock of it. Matt, Sam, Tom, and Parley dropped to the floor behind the dubious protection of the tables. A half dozen gun hands crawled on hands and knees into the storeroom and out the back door. Deputies Van Dixon and Nate Perry ran up to the shattered windows of the saloon with greeners in their hands, saw where their friends were, and cut loose at anyone standing up. As quickly as the shooting began, it ended. Those outlaws who had taken part in the gunplay were either dead or dying. Slowly, those on the side of the law stood up, their hands filled with .44s and .45s.
You boys who took no part in this, hit the air.
Doc Blaine and the Undertaker and his helper rose up to their knees and looked around at all the carnage the few moments of gunplay had produced. Doc Blaine glanced over at young Parley.
Get some men in here to help carry the badly wounded out. Where's my bag?
George, get some sawdust and cover up this blood. It's slippery as an ice house in here.
A man wearing an expensive suit and low-heeled shoes stepped into the barroom. Neither Matt nor Sam had ever seen this citizen before. He shook his head at the sight.
Mr. Singer, good to have you back. How was your trip?
The big man eyed the Blood Brothers. A smile was on his lips, but his eyes were cold and hostile.
Fine, Tom. Just fine. New deputies, Tom?
Young Parley is, and Nate and Van. These are friends of mine, Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves. This is Miles Singer, boys. Owns the bank and a right nice spread north of town.
The brothers nodded their greetings, then looked at each other, their secret suspicions now almost solidly confirmed. The town of Crossville, a.k.a. Carlin Sutton, held quite a mystery, and the brothers held the key to the long-locked door. Now, all they had to do was stay alive long enough to open it.
lot of speculation with no proof, brother.
Has to be, though.
The brothers had saddled up and ridden out of town to sit and talk by the side of a little creek about a mile from the town. There was no way anyone could slip up on them to eavesdrop.
So of the three men, how many of them know the truth?
Singer, for sure. Maybe John Carlin. I think Bull is totally in the dark.
Their kids?
Now that might be a possibility.
And what business is it of ours?
Absolutely none.
So, who do we tell our suspicions to?
No one. At least not yet.
Agreed. We have no proof. A gut hunch won't stand up in court.
The brothers looked at one another and grinned.
We could have some fun.
You have an evil mind, Redskin.
Evil's contagious. I probably caught it from you.
The brothers rode back to town, both of them reining down in front of the telegraph office. They sent their wires and then went back to their room at the hotel and sat by the window overlooking the main street. They waited for the fireworks to start. They watched as the telegrapher locked up his office and hustled over to the bank.
Just like we thought he would. You know, there is yet another person who might just be involved in this mystery.
Ledoux.
Very good, brother. Yes. But how and why?
How, I don't know. Why might be that if he sits back, he might pick up some of the pieces after the big blow. I got the feeling that he wasn't leveling with us that day we talked at length.
He's crazy, you know.
I picked up on that. He just might feel, like a few of those old mountain men do, that since he was here first, all this belongs to him. Mountain fever might have got him.
All right. Answer me this. Who are the gunfighters really working for?
I'd say that some of them are really on John's payroll. The majority of them are working for Singer.
Agreed. Must have thrown a kink into things when Bull fired his pack.
And didn't Tom say that Singer came back early from his trip?
Yeah. He was supposed to have been gone several weeks. If I had to take a guess, I'd say that J.B. Adams is Singer's front man in all this. He got word to Singer through the telegraph office. Unless Ben Connors was lying that evening back on the trail.
What about Tom Riley?
Do you trust him?
Yes and no. Tom's not a young man any longer. He might be thinking about his future and seeing a pretty bleak road ahead of him. But that's just speculation.
We're thinking alike. Brother, we are in a very dangerous spot in all this.
Here's something else, too. I don't think we could ride out even if we wanted to.
Nor do I. I started getting a funny feeling yesterday afternoon that we were being watched. The plot thickens.
Let's don't let it get too thick. It's tough getting out of quicksand.
The brothers were conscious of being followed, and whoever was paying the men had obviously told them to be certain the brothers were aware of it. Matt and Sam decided to make the best of it and try to ignore their followers. But it took an effort. Bank drafts that the brothers had wired for came in on the stage from Wells Fargo, and Miles Singer's eyes bugged out when the young men deposited the checks at his bank.
You boys, planning on investing in property around here?
Hadn't thought about it.
We just like to have ample spending money. We can be real big spenders. You sure the money will be safe in your bank?
Oh, my, yes. That's the finest safe in all of Idaho Territory.
That makes me feel better already.
The brothers left the bank, both of them carrying a large amount of cash in paper and gold coin.
Now, can you tell me your plan for doing this?
What plan?
The plan. The reasoning for this transfer of funds and for our walking around with too much damn money on us.
Oh, I don't have a plan. I just thought it might stir things up some.
You don't have a... Why doesn't this surprise me?
Matt just grinned at him and walked on. They watched as Laredo and Rusty rode into town and up to the Bull's Den. Several tired horses, showing the signs of a long ride, were tied at the rail. The brothers walked over and inside. Laredo waved at Matt and Sam and motioned them up to the bar.
Man, I can't begin to tell you boys how nice it is now out to the ranch. Boss ain't got a gun slick on the payroll. And these here old boys is just signing on.
Laredo turned to the punchers at the bar.
Boys, this here's Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves. Sutton, Hal, Patton, and Gamble.
So, the Bull really meant it when he said the war was over.
You bet your boots he did. And them no-count kids of his was mad about all that. All but Connie. She's a fine girl. But Ross and Hugh and Randy, whew, boys, they was some hot.
But not mad enough to leave home.
Oh, no. They knew what side their biscuits is buttered on, but I don't trust none of them. I shouldn't be talking family stuff to you boys, but the bull sort of admires your nerve and likes the both of you. He said when I seen you to tell you to come out whenever you've a mind to. The coffee's always hot.
Tell him we appreciate that and we'll do it, but it might not be a wise thing to do with us being followed all the time.
Hal turned and looked out the window.
You talking about them two hard cases across the street?
That's two of them, yeah. They work in teams.
That's Dud Mackin and Butch Proctor. I knew them down Moab way. They're bad uns, back shooters and sneak thieves. They usually ride with a heavyset fella called Donner. Looks like he needs a shave all the time.
He's one of them, all right.
Matt described the other three of the six men they had spotted.
Yeah, they don't ring no bell with me, but you can bet if they're working with Proctor and Mackin and Donner, they're bad uns.
Where are they staying?
At the hotel. All six of them.
That's odd. I ain't never know John to put up nobody at the hotel. Not even cattle buyers. They all stay out at his house. Maybe they ain't working for the Circle JC.
And who are they working for?
You got me. This thing just keeps getting queerer and queerer.
Laredo and the new men finished their beers and rode out for home range. Matt and Sam walked out on the boardwalk in time to see John Carlin and his brood come riding into town. The girls in a buggy, flanked on both sides by hired guns, all of them kicking up unnecessary dust.
Parade comes to town.
Sam looked at Johnny Carlin as the young man swung down from the saddle.
Complete with court jester. Brother, if those yahoos following us aren't working for his lord and majesty there, who are they working for?
Singer, I guess. I think Ledoux would handle his own affairs if it came to that. And I'm still not sure which side he's on, if he's on any side.
He is. His own side.
John Carlin glanced over at the brothers and gave them a cold look before turning his back to them and walking into the Carlin house, followed by half a dozen gunmen. His daughter and wife walked to the general store and stepped inside, the rest of the hired guns with them. Sam looked down the street toward the fork in the road.
Well now, things are about to get real interesting.
Hugh, Randy, and Ross Sutton were riding slowly into town. Johnny, Clement, and Pete Carlin stood on the boardwalk in front of the Carlin house and watched them. The Carlin brothers all slipped the hammer thongs from their holstered pistols, a move that did not escape the eyes of Matt and Sam. Two of the Sutton boys reined up in front of the bull's den and swung down. They gave the Blood brothers a mean glance and stepped inside the saloon. Hugh had reined in by the saddle shop and disappeared into the alley. Young Parley walked up.
Tom and Van rode out early this morning. The rustlers hit one of them smaller spreads south of here. Nate's gone out to a farmer's place to talk to him about a horse being stolen. Can I count on you boys to help me if trouble starts?
You know you can.
Matt was paying little attention, his gaze on the mouth of the alley. His eyes narrowed as the heavy-set Donner stepped out and looked up and down the street before heading into the Carlin house.
What the hell?
Matt watched as Hugh stepped out of the alley, stood for a moment, and then walked up the boardwalk.
This stew is getting a little thick.
Hugh exited the bank and strolled up to the bull's den, looking over at Matt before pushing open the bat wings. The Carlin brothers stepped out of the saloon across the street, guns drawn.
All right, come on out and let's settle this now. Come on out, you Sutton bastards!
The brothers and the deputy vacated that area as quickly as possible. The boardwalk in front of the Carlin house was crowded with Carlins and hired guns. John Carlin standing near the boardwalk's end near the alley, where Matt and Sam and Parley were watching.
Draw, you bastards!
Nobody seemed to be hitting anything except air and glass and wood. Then Nat saw Marcel turn, an evil grin on his lips, and point his pistol at his own father. Nat lunged, grabbed John Carlin by the boots, and jerked him off the boardwalk just as Marcel fired. John Carlin hit the ground hard. Marcel had turned and was once more firing at the Sutton brothers, and just like everybody else, was hitting nothing.
What the hell?
Stay down, you damn fool. Your own son just tried to kill you.
You bat.
Why would I lie? Look at them, John. They're all standing out in the open and not a damn one of them is hitting anything. Does that tell you something?
John Carlin sat up and looked at what was now clearly a mock battle. He turned his eyes to Matt.
What in the hell is going on here?
Break this up right now.
or we start shooting!
The firing stopped as if on cue, and the would-be warriors stepped back into the saloons.
Get back in the damn saloons!
Parley holstered his pistol. He and Sam stepped up onto the boardwalk.
John, don't turn your back on Marcel, or any of your other kids for that matter. I think your kids and Bull's kids are all in this thing together. And there's a whole lot more, too. It's complicated.
John stared at him for a moment, then shook his head and heaved himself to his boots, and, now standing, took a long and disbelieving look at the deserted street.
My boys are all cracked shots, and so are Bull's boys. Those gunfighters are expert marksmen, but nobody hit anything. You claim you saved my life. Maybe you did. I reckon we've got to talk.
You and me and Sam and Bull. My brother and I have a theory. 1 hour before sunset by that creek just south of town where the beaver had the dam. Agreed?
Agreed.
Is that young man with your wife, your son Daniel?
Yeah.
Stay with him. And bring him with you to the creek. I think he's the only one of your kids you can trust.
I hope to God you're talking nonsense, Bodine.
You better brace yourself. What Sam and me have to say is going to come as a real shock to both you and Bull.
Not no more than that put-up fight I just witnessed.
I wouldn't count on it.
When Matt got Sam off to himself, he told him what had transpired and asked him to ride for Bull's spread and have him meet them at the creek and to say nothing to anyone else, especially any of his kids. John Carlin told his family and hired guns to head back to the ranch and cool off. Daniel stayed with his father in town, both of them on the pretense of having business to take care of. All the parties concerned met at the creek about an hour before sundown. John and Bull stood glaring at each other, a few yards apart, absolutely no love lost between them. But at Matt's request, they had looped their gun belts over their saddle horns.
This had better be good, boys. I got supper waiting, and it's a fine one.
Damn waste of time, if you ask me.
Let's sit, gentlemen. Nature placed these logs just perfect for that.
After they were seated, Matt spoke 4 words. The 2 ranchers came off the logs as if propelled out of a cannon.
We're what? You're out of your goddamn mind.
Oh, there's more. There were 3 of you. Singer is another.
Both men sat down on the logs. Daniel Carlin and Connie Sutton moved closer together and held hands. Their faces were pale.
Go squat down by the creek and look at your reflections in the water together. Go on. Do it.
Reluctantly, the ranchers moved to the creek and knelt down, staring at their reflections. They looked at each other, then back at their reflections.
Both orphans, right?
Yeah. We came from the same part of the country. But I knew my mother. Her name was Estelle.
And my mother's name was Claire.
How about your father's?
I don't know anything about him, except he was a big bear of a man with dark curly hair.
Same with me. Mother said he was a big strong man. I had an older brother, I know that, but I never saw him. I have no idea where he might be. My mother said my father had dark, curly hair. Were you a woods colt, Bull?
Yeah.
Me too.
Papa got around, didn't he?
Looks like it. And we do kind of resemble, Bull.
I have to say that's right. And come to think of it, Singer bears a strong likeness to us. You trust your kids, John?
Hell no. At least not after today. I've been doing some strong thinking, too. And I think my kids are playing me for a sucker.
Yeah, me too. But I have to say that since I fired all those damn gun hands, my wife and I have, you know what I mean. We're, closer.
My wife hadn't had much to do with me for some years, Bull. You reckon if I fired those gun slicks, it might improve my situation at home?
It damn sure did for me.
John nodded his big head. He looked at his son.
Dan, this is what you've been trying to tell me for some time. My kids are traitors toward me, right?
I'm afraid so, Dad. But I don't know if you can fire those gunfighters.
You want to explain that, boy?
The young man looked over at Matt.
They might just laugh in your face, John. I have a hunch they're working for your kids, Bull's kids, and for Singer.
What a sorry-ass mess.
Dad, if you and Mr. Carlin are half-brothers, what does that make Dan and me?
Half-first cousins. No. Full-second cousins. No. I'm going to have to think about this for a while.
What it means is having kids just might be chancy. But hell, people marry first and second cousins all the time. I ain't got no objections to you two getting hitched. You, John?
Not a one. You have my blessings. Bull, can you just imagine 100 years from now someone trying to look up this family tree?
Head for cover!
You okay, son?
Whew, fine, Dad.
You all right, baby?
I'm fine, Dad. I just wish I could get to my rifle.
Matt tossed Connie a pistol and she caught it.
Now I feel better.
Don't anybody try to move. They got us down cold.
Matt saw what he thought was a boot sticking out from behind a thick stand of brush and aimed about 2 feet up from the boot.
Oh, Christ! My knees!
Sam rolled to his right and reached the safety of rocks.
Rob Supreme! He's trying to slip around us!
That's Clement. My old son is trying to kill me.
Hell with the others. Kill John and Bo.
That's Randy. Dear God in heaven, what kind of kids did we produce?
Well, it's all out in the open now. We can legally kick them out.
How? All we've heard are voices. None of us have seen anybody. No judgment on that.
It'll be dark in about 30 minutes. We can hold out till then. We have a chance.
Kill that bitch County, too.
Ross, my youngest son, who wants to kill his sister.
Connie aimed her pistol in the general direction of her brother's voice.
Shit! I damn near got shot!
Connie took more careful aim.
Are you hit?
That's Marcel.
No! If it'd been an inch closer, I'd been dead.
John pointed his pistol at the brush where Marcel's voice had been.
Oh, hell!
That's it! Let's get out of here!
That was my son Pete who yelled that last bit. The traitorous little shit.
I've never seen any of those hired guns. Somebody's brought in men and kept them hidden out.
Who the hell can we trust?
If these words had come out of my mouth this morning, somebody would have had to put me in the loony bin, John. But I reckon we can trust each other.
John nodded his big head and stuck out his hand. Bull took the peace offering.
I don't know how to handle this. What do I say to my kids when I get back home? How do I act?
With about 10 minutes of light remaining, Tom Riley reined up and jumped down from the saddle, Van Dixon with him.
We heard the shooting. What the hell's going on here?
We were ambushed. We were meeting out here to call an end to the war, and someone slipped up on us. None of us ever got a glimpse of a face.
You don't have any idea as to who it might have been?
Not a clue.
Nothing.
Tom looked at both men. He took a longer, closer look, then he shook his head.
You know, I don't want to start a fight between you two, but I just now noticed something. You two damn sure resemble. Now, don't fly off the handle at me. Lots of folks resemble. I was just voicing the thought, that's all.
They should resemble, Tom. They're half-brothers.
Brothers?
Van Dixon stood speechless, staring first at Bull, then at John.
Matt and Sam put it together, Tom. Up until a few seconds ago, none of us really knew what side you stood on. Now I reckon you're neutral. It was our kids who ambushed us.
Your kids? All right, now, goddammit, somebody want to tell me what the hell is going on?
Quickly and succinctly, Sam leveled with the man. The marshal was so shaken by the revelations, he had to look around and find a large rock to sit on. He took off his hat and fanned himself.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph, I ain't ready for this. And you think Miles Singer is also your brother?
Yeah, the resemblance is just too uncanny to be coincidence. But it took Matt and Sam here to point that out to us. He's got the same features as me and John, same build, same everything. Including being totally unreasonable about damn near anything, and stubborn as a Missouri mule.
We think Bull's and John's kids, with the exception of Dan and Connie here, are in this with Singer, and the gunfighters are working for them.
And you really didn't see any of the men who attacked you today?
No, but me and Bull know the voices of our sorry kids, and the boys were damn sure here taking part in it. I heard Clement and Marcel, and Bull heard Randy and Ross.
That's no good in a court of law.
We know it, John, but I got a plan. You better stay in town tonight, and I'll ride in the morning, and we'll meet at Lawyer Sprague's office at 9 o'clock. I'm changing my will. Leaving everything to Connie and Ross, and adding that under no circumstances will any of the other kids get any part of the ranch or my money, no matter what happens.
I think Sprague can set it up so it's ironclad. You do the same, John. And then we'll have Tom and his deputies ride out to your place. And you can order the gun hands out. What do you say?
Sounds good to me. Just as soon as the gun hands leave, I'm kicking all my kids out, except for Daniel.
The girls, too?
Well, they're in it just as strong as the boys. Connie and I have known it for months.
I'll give them all some money to tide them over. I'll set up accounts in Denver for them all. But from this moment on, I disown them all.
Denver sounds good to me, too. What do we do about Singer?
I don't know. Let's face that after we deal with our no-count kids.
You gonna be all right tonight, Bull?
Oh, yeah. I'll ride in the back way and brief the boys in the bunkhouse. I got the makings of a good crew, and Laredo's rock solid.
Bull stuck out his hand, and John shook it.
We got years of catching up to do, brother. I look forward to going fishing and hunting with you.
Me too, brother. Me too.
John told his wife everything. She was horrified at the behavior of her children, but pleased to learn the war was, at long last, over.
What about the girls, John?
I won't leave them penniless, Jenny. I'll set up trust funds so they won't starve or walk around with their drawers showing through ragged dresses. But they'll, by God, have to find work.
But they're not trained to do anything.
That is their problem.
Lawyer Sprague was a sour-faced man, but he kept his mouth shut about his clients and knew the law. He didn't blink an eye at the will changes. He drew them up, the men signed them, Matt and Sam witnessed the documents, and that was that. Tom Riley left Nate Perry to look after things in town and took Parley and Van with him. Bull and Matt and Sam rode with John back to the Circle JC. It was a grim-faced group of men who rode up to the house of John Carlin. Dan Carlin had taken his mother to the upstairs of the mansion and was guarding her against a possible attack by his brothers and sisters and the hired guns. The other sons and daughters of John and Jenny Carlin sat in the living room downstairs and waited for their father to make an appearance. They were sullen and scared, and no amount of tough talk or bravado could hide that. The girls were weepy and the boys grim-faced. John had stopped by the bank to line his pockets with cash money to pay off the gun hands, and both he and Bull had closed out their accounts with Miles Singer and withdrawn all their funds, leaving the man in a state of cold sweat shock and the bank very nearly void of ready cash. Miles was going to have to sink a lot of his own funds into the bank's coffers just to prevent a run once the news got out, and even that might not keep the man solvent.
You're all fired. Line up over yonder and draw your pay. The war is over, and I don't need you no more.
I run this spread. Don't you men pay no attention to him. You all work for me.
You don't run nothing, boy. You can pack up your junk and get gone with them.
What?
There ain't nothing wrong with your ears. You heard me.
Oh, Daddy, I've just been worried sick about you. I'm so glad to see you home safely.
John cut cold eyes to his daughter.
Pack your crap too, girl. I will not abide something like you under my roof. Lars, are you with me or against me?
Solid with you, boss.
Hitch up the buggy and drive Miss Petunia into town when she's ready.
Right, boss.
But, Daddy!
Hush up your mouth and pack.
J.B. Adams and Ben Connors sized up the situation quickly. Everything had gone sour out here, and there was no point in kicking up a fuss about it. Parley and Van held sawed-off shotguns in their hands, the hammers back. Matt Bodine was looking square at him, and Sam Two Wolves was facing Ben. Tom Riley was staring hard at rambling Ed Clark, and Bull Sutton was holding a rifle aimed smack at Yock Zapata's belly. He cut his eyes to the second floor of the ranch house. Daniel Carlin was aiming a rifle at Dick Yandel's chest. And Jenny Carlin was aiming a rifle at Philip Baquet, and Baquet was well aware of it. The percentages were all wrong here, J.B. thought. Best thing to do was draw their pay and ride into town.
I'll get my gear from the bunkhouse, John.
Fine, J.B.
By God, I won't.
Baquet put both hands in his pockets and turned to face Jenny Carlin's rifle.
I'm out of this, Mrs. Carlin. I'm going to pack my possessions and then draw my time.
Baquet turned and walked toward the bunkhouse, most of the others following. Only the younger, less wise ones stayed put, facing the line of lawmen, ranchers, and the Blood Brothers.
You see? Them's working for us, Paul. It's you'd better pack your war bag and get going from here.
Clement, you got a couple of choices, and I'll name them. Either pack and get out, or fill your hand.
The expression on the young man's face was clear shock. His own father was telling him to draw down. He couldn't believe it.
Back off. He's holding all the cards. We can wait. Go on in the house and start getting our crap together, all of you. Move. All right, Papa. You win this round, but you can't take back the sections of land you done give us over the years. All them acres is ours, free and clear. That's ours now and forever.
Damn, I forgot about that.
Well, me too. I did the same thing while land grabbing and snatching up everything in sight. Don't look like we'll ever get shut of them.
Get gone.
You're gonna have to move me.
Utah Bates' hands twitched. John shot him. Johnny and Clement Carlin stared at their father. They all knew their dad was quick with a shotgun, but they had never dreamed he was that quick.
Anybody else? No? Then throw that dead coyote across his saddle, tie him in place, and get him off my property. Bury him far away from here.
John's children still stood on the front porch.
You best rattle your hocks.
We're taking our share of the cattle.
You're taking nothing, Marcel. You got no share of my herds. I just changed my will. All legal and proper. You get nothing. Nothing at all. Now or ever. Now get your conniving butts off my property and don't never set foot back here again. Your names will be stricken from the family Bible, and from this moment on, you are no kin of mine. Go suck up to Miles Singer.
How did you know about...
How ain't important, but we know.
J.B. Adams and Ben Connors mounted their horses.
You're responsible for all this, Bodine. I'll bet my boots and saddle on that. We'll be around. We'll meet up sooner or later.
You won't be betting your boots and saddle, J.B.
Huh?
You'll be betting your life.
You'll face me first, Bodine.
I'll take you, Yock. I can't let my brother have all the fun.
I'll be looking forward to that.
Rambling Ed Clark mounted up.
See you around, Bodine.
I hope not.
Oh, you can bet on it. You and that goddamn half-breed brother of yours.
I look forward to meeting you.
It'll be the last thing you'll do.
Burl Golden was the last of the hired guns to leave. He walked his horse up to the group.
It ain't over, John. Bull, you must know that.
The ranchers nodded their heads in agreement.
You going to work for Miles Singer now?
Money's right. I reckon so.
A smart man would ride on out.
Some people ranch, others practice the law, still others run stores. I hire my gun. It's what I do.
Yeah!
John looked as his sons, carrying carpet bags and bedrolls, left the house and walked toward the corral.
Yonder goes my life. It was all going to be theirs. Everything I worked for. How could a man get to my age and still be so damn stupid?
I have a suggestion, John.
I'm sure open to them, Jenny.
When this is all over and done with, we'll go to that orphanage north of here and bring back a half dozen children. We're not too old to start over. We both like the sound of kids in the house.
You want some company?
John and Jenny smiled their replies.
You ready to go clean out your nest of varmints, brother?
Let's do it.
The men met Randy Sutton on the road into town. Bull cut his horse in front of his son, halting him.
The rest of your no-count brothers and sisters packing, boy?
Yeah. You happy about that, you cheap bastard?
Bull leaned over and slapped the young man clear out of the saddle. Randy's hand dropped to the butt of his gun.
Try it. Just try it, you little turd.
I reckon I won't. Let it be too easy. We got other plans for you.
I'm sure you do.
Randy got to his feet and brushed the dirt from his jeans.
Do I have your permission to leave now, your great lord and majesty?
Why, boy? Why you kids did it is all I want to know.
Money, Daddy. What else?
But you had everything in the world you ever asked for. What more do you want?
We're all sick of living in your shadow.
Well, you're damn sure clear of it now.
That suits the hell out of me. And you can go to hell, too.
Randy rode off without looking back.
What a sorry day.
The Sutton kids were all waiting on the front porch for their dad. The girls had not been crying. They were dry-eyed and mean-looking.
You waiting on a formal invite to carry your butts?
We proved up the land you give us. You can't run us off that.
Oh, I can. But as long as you stay clear of me, I won't. Just don't try to steal my cattle. And don't ever come onto my range. Randy said y'all wanted to get clear of my shadow. You're clear. You got some land. Enough for y'all to have nice spreads. Now you'll see what work is. Now you'll see what it's like to fight blizzards and droughts. Now you'll see what it's like to stay in the saddle for 24 hours or more at a time, breaking the ice off water holes and moving cattle to keep them from freezing to death. You'll find out...
Now shut the hell up! No one wants to hear your goddamn old stories about how hard you worked. We're sick of hearing them.
Then hear this.
Bull told them about the changing of the will, told them about Miles Singer and how John had fired all the gunfighters.
The war is over. You all have 10 minutes to clear out. I suggest you get moving.
You gonna make us walk?
Take your horses and a spare mount. I closed out my bank account in town and opened a small one for each of you. You'll be able to get by, but you'll have to watch every penny from now on. Don't come squealing to me when your money runs out.
I expect, Pa, we'll be looking at each other over gun barrels before this is all over.
I hope not, boy. I surely hope not.
Shorty and Cleek walked up, leading their horses.
We're leaving with the kids. We got time coming.
Bull threw some money onto the ground.
Take it and clear out.
The Sutton brood and their hired guns got on their horses and into their buggies and pulled out. Bull turned to John.
What do you say we combine our spreads and call it the Circle B?
Sounds good to me, but what's the B stand for?
Brothers.
John ordered the Carlin House closed and told the bartender and the swamper to report for work at the newly named Crossville Saloon. The Bull's Den was just as gone as the Carlin House. Several gun hands went in and bought the old Bull's Den with money provided by the Carlin and Sutton kids and renamed it the Red Dog Saloon. The Express carried the headlines. Peace. There was some sentiment in town, as the citizens looked at the 30-odd gun hands drifting in and out of town, that the headline might be at least a little premature. Matt and Sam were staying on at the newly named Circle B, working as cowhands until more punchers could be found. The combined ranges of the two men were huge, the largest in the territory, and they needed a lot of men to work the cattle, ride fences, cut hay for winter feed, and do the many other jobs that working cowboys did. Matt and Sam had ridden into town with Daniel and two hands driving wagons to pick up supplies, and they reined in at the new bank, the Crossville Cattle Exchange, where Matt and Sam had transferred their holdings from Singer's Bank. Daniel looked up the street.
Trouble coming?
Hugh and Randy Sutton, with a half dozen of the mangiest looking men Matt had seen in many a day, were riding slowly up the street.
Where the hell did he find that motley crew?
Donner, Butch Proctor, and Pud Mackin wandered out of the Red Dog Saloon to stand on the boardwalk.
Right on cue. It's a setup.
Big doings about 15 miles west of here. Tom and all his deputies left about 2 hours ago. Some sort of shooting, I think it was. Well now, look there, will you? Something funny going on here.
Matt looked. Henry Rogers, Rod Hansen, and Bob Goody were swinging down from their saddles in front of the Mexican Cafe at the end of the main street.
We're boxed in.
When the shooting starts, Daniel, you hit the ground. You're your pa's sole son now. You gotta stay alive. Don't argue with me.
I can hold my own.
He's right. Just hit the ground at the first pistol crack.
Don't argue, boy. Just do it.
Sam turned to the citizen who'd been talking to them.
Get the people off the street. All hell's going to break loose here in about 2 minutes.
The citizen took off in a trot. Sam moved to his horse and took his spare six-gun from a saddlebag.
Look at the bank. There's Singer standing in the door.
The big man was smiling as he stood in the open door to his bank.
There's Miss Petunia and Miss Wanda on the porch of the hotel. Looks like they're getting ready to enjoy the show.
Sam shoved the spare six-gun behind his belt.
Who knew we were coming into town?
We always come in town on a Wednesday for supplies. The Circle JC in the morning, Bull's Boys in the afternoon. They worked that out a long time ago. It wouldn't take no dictionary maker to set this up.
Coming up behind us in the alley. I'll handle this bunch. Get ready. It's about to blow up on us. Ow!
Sam tossed Daniel to the ground behind the water trough just as the warm air was filled with hot lead. Lars hauled out a long-barreled peacemaker and shot one of those sneaking up behind the bunch in the belly. His buddies broke and ran for whatever cover they could find. Lars dropped to one knee and nailed another in the leg, sending the man sprawling on his face in the alley. Sam lined up a bearded fat man who had ridden in with the Sutton boys and drilled him in the brisket, doubling the man over and dropping him on his butt in the street. Ross Sutton appeared in the doorway of Singer's Bank, both hands filled with guns. Matt snapped a shot at him that missed and knocked a chunk of wood from the doorframe just as Slim fired and blew Ross's hat off his head.
Whoa!
The young man fell back into the bank.
God damn it, get off me, you buffoon!
Slim got burned on the shoulder. Matt felt the tug of a bullet on his shirt sleeve, and another spat dirt at his boots. Daniel Carlin crawled to a shooting position behind the trough and triggered off a round, the bullet striking one of the Sutton gunfighters in the knee, knocking the man down. The Sutton boys had disappeared, leaving the fighting to the men they had hired. The air between the buildings of the main street was filled with gun smoke and the moaning of the wounded. Matt and Sam were standing very nearly shoulder to shoulder and taking a dreadful toll on those gunslingers still standing and battling in the street. One of the six men hired by the Sutton boys was still alive and standing on his feet. And he quickly sized up the situation as being really lousy and turned and ran into the alley between the general store and Miss Charlotte's dress shop. Sam was bleeding from a scratch on the cheek made by a flying splinter. Matt had a bullet burn on his arm, Lars was unhit, and Slim had a burn on his shoulder. Daniel crawled to his boots, dusty but unhurt. Petunia Carlin and Wanda Sutton had vanished from the front porch of the hotel. Doc Blaine ran up, carrying his little black bag, the editor of the paper right behind him, carrying his bulky photographic equipment. He quickly set up and began taking pictures of the bloody scene and of the men still standing in front of the Crossville Cattle Exchange Bank. Willa Sutton suddenly appeared at the second floor window of the hotel. One of her slugs knocked one of the tripod legs out from under the camera and sent the equipment crashing to the street, and Ralph Masters flapping his arms and dashing for cover.
We'll show this damn two-bit town!
Scarlett Sutton stepped out onto the front porch of the hotel, leveling a shotgun. She pulled both triggers, and the recoil knocked her through a window and sent her crashing into the lobby. The desk clerk wrestled the shotgun from her and suffered various contusions and abrasions to his person doing so. The buckshot from the shotgun hurt no one, but it damn sure cleared the street of anyone who had not already exited the area. Wanda, having emptied her rifle, came down the stairs, pulling a hog leg from her purse.
Take your damn hands off my sister!
None of the girls could hit a barn if they were standing inside it, but they could sure scatter some lead around. The desk clerk went out the same window that Scarlett had come crashing through about a minute before and fell on the porch. He jumped to his feet and rounded the side of the hotel at speeds he hadn't reached since boyhood. Wanda shot down the chandelier, stopped the grandfather clock permanently at 10 past 10, sent the chef crawling under a chopping block, and plugged a couple of sofas and chairs before running out of ammunition.
Do something about them damn girls.
Well, hell, you can't shoot a woman.
I'm not so sure about that.
The townspeople were just coming out of their various hiding places when the girls, Wanda, Willa, Scarlett, and Petunia, stole four saddled mounts and took off out of town, riding straight up the main street. John Carlin and Bull Sutton were riding into town to tie up some legal business when they spotted the girls coming hell-bent for leather their way. The girls weren't much good with guns, but they could all ride like the wind. John went one way off the road and Bull went the other to avoid being run down by their rampaging daughter. The ranchers got their horses under control and rode on into town. They reined up at the sight of the bloody and body-littered street.
Your boy's all right, Bull.
What happened?
Well,
Say it!
Your other boys tried to bushwhack Daniel and the others in his party. Then the gals shot up the town.
The brothers rode slowly on.
You know it's going to be up to us to put an end to this matter, don't you?
I'm afraid you're right, John. But it makes me sick at my stomach to think about it.
I feel like puking right now.
The men stepped down, and Bull walked over to Doc Blaine as he attended a wounded gun hand.
You should have stayed away from here.
Morning, Bull. I was going to call them boys out proper-like, but your oldest boy jumped the gun and started banging away. He sure got a powerful hate for Daniel. Oh, has he got the money to back up his words like he say he do?
He's got some money of his own, yeah.
Well, then I guess he'll just hire some more old boys and not rest until either he's dead or Daniel is.
You'll live.
You don't sound too happy about that, Doc.
Should I be?
Doc Blaine moved to another wounded gunslinger. He knelt down beside the fat man and cut open his shirt. Blaine looked the man in the eyes and shook his head. The fat man closed his eyes. The bartender and the swamper dragged the bullet-riddled body of Henry Rogers out of the saloon and dumped it in the street.
Here's another one.
Ooh, my.
The undertaker rushed from body to body, rubbing his hands together and mentally counting the money he would make.
See if they have any cash on him before we agree to bury him.
John turned to Matt and Sam.
You boys all right?
Oh, yeah. Just a little dusty and a little worse for wear is all.
Bull, can I ask you a question?
Whatever you like, Matt.
When was the last time you took a belt to the behinds of your daughters?
I never did, except when they were little. But I sure should have. So Miles Singer is my full brother, the youngest of the three boys.
A dog wandered over to the boardwalk, inspected the body of Rod Hansen, then hiked his leg.
I can't think of a more apt tribute.
The Sutton kids and the Carlin kids just seemed to drop off the face of the earth. A drifting cowboy said he saw a bunch of young people, men and women, camped out northeast of the town in the rugged mountain country. He said they were real unfriendly, and he didn't tarry long. He said the young folks also had with them about a dozen randy-looking gunfighters. The cowboy was hired by John Carlin. The town of Crossville buried the dead gunslingers without fanfare, patched up the others, and for a week, not one shot was heard. Repairs were made to the hotel, and the chef bought himself a double-barreled sawed-off shotgun to keep in the kitchen, just in case the Carlin and Sutton girls decided to make another appearance. John Carlin now had hired enough punchers to maintain his herds, and Matt and Sam waved away his offer of payment for their services. Jenny Carlin and Roz Sutton had become close friends and often visited one another. They immediately became active in county affairs and began organizing drives to aid the less fortunate with clothing and food and so forth.
A happy ending.
You believe that?
No, but it sounds good.
Let's go pay Ledoux a visit. Check out his general mood.
Ledoux was about as friendly as a rattlesnake with its tail caught in a beaver trap.
If you two hadn't stuck your noses into affairs that don't concern you, all this mess would have been settled.
You encouraged us to stay.
I was looking forward to a good gunfight, and you two getting killed.
Matt sat down without being asked.
You think it all belongs to you, right?
Heh, bright boy, ain't you? Goddamn right it's mine. I was here first, so that makes it mine.
I believe the Indians were here first. So if you apply that logic, it belongs to them, right?
Who told Bull Sutton that John Carlin stole his initial herds?
He only had about 400 head when he first came out here. Just about the same size herd as Bull. And he still got the papers to prove he bought them in Illinois and Missouri.
Come on, Ledoux. Level with us. You know the Carlin and Sutton kids aren't going to win this fight. The territorial governor will order militia in here if he has to. What's your real stake in all this?
Hey, you boys think you so smart, you figure it out. Now get out of my trading post and don't come back.
Could Ledoux be the real father of Carlin and Sutton and Singer?
I don't think so. He doesn't fit the description the men have of their father. I think he's just a bitter old man who would like to see things like they were 35 or 40 years ago.
Of course. We have yet to talk to Singer.
Want to try again?
Singer stared at the two men and finally waved them to his office and into chairs. The bank was void of customers, and Singer had no employees left. The tellers had gone to work over at the Cattle Exchange Bank. He smiled, but it was not a pretty sight.
I certainly have no reason to be friendly toward you. I just about had it all until you two showed up. And I might yet. Now then, what do you want? As if I couldn't make a reasonably accurate guess.
Why all the hate toward your half-brothers?
I don't hate them. It's just business for me. And I'm only a half-brother to John. Bull and I are full brothers.
Your father?
Oh, he's dead. He was a reprobate and a rake, but a wealthy one. He left me pretty well fixed back east. A jealous husband finally shot the old bastard years ago.
The Dew?
He's my uncle, my father's brother. He's also as crazy as a loon. Father said he was always strange, but the mountains drove him over the edge. I had no idea he was still alive. But I recognized him from an old tintype my father had in his possession.
Matt stared at the man for a moment.
And now you're bankrolling the kids in their fight against their fathers?
Now, you don't expect me to admit to anything like that, do you?
It was worth a try.
Anything else, boys?
Sam leaned forward.
You're plotting to kill your own brother and your own half-brother? And you have no more feeling about it than shooting a rattlesnake? What the hell kind of person are you?
I'm not plotting to kill anybody. Those are your words. I'm looking at this from a purely business standpoint. If something unfortunate happens to my brothers, well, I would be truly sorry about that. I would make my best offer to buy their ranches. And I would be most generous, I assure you. Now then, boys, since I fully expect you both to run tattling to John and Bo with every word I just said, I have taken the precaution of hiring several bodyguards. They came in yesterday. Two of them are standing behind you right now.
Hello, Matt.
Hello, Donner. Who's your buddy?
Narburn. You've heard the name, I'm sure.
I've seen it written on the inside of outhouse walls from time to time. Yeah.
Nyburn tensed.
Hold your peace, boys. The time will come. Chase Martin and Blue Anderson are outside, Matt. I believe you're both familiar with those names, too?
Sam pushed back his chair and stood up. He smiled at Singer as Matt got to his feet.
We've heard them. You didn't pull top gunslingers in here for John and Bull, Singer. You pulled them in for us. So that makes it real personal.
Oh, you just scared me to death, Sam. The day I back up from some goddamn half-breed engine will be the day...
Sam spun around and wiped the sneer off his face with a solid right fist to the mouth. Nyburn's boots flew out from under him, and he landed heavily, his mouth a bloody smear. He started crawling slowly to his boots just as Sam reached down, jerked Nyburn's Colt from leather, and tossed it to the floor. Donner had turned around at the blow, dropping his hand to the butt of his pistol, and he suddenly felt the cold muzzle of a .44 against his neck.
We'll just keep this on his back, shooter. If any of your people outside try to interfere, you're a dead man.
You're buying yourself a lot of grief, Bodine.
I'm just scared to death, Donner. Shut up.
The two bodyguards outside came rushing in into a fast halt when they saw the .44 pressed against Donner's neck.
Just stand back and enjoy the show, boys. It'll be a good one, I can promise you that.
Nyburn lurched to his boots and lifted his fists.
You sucker punched me, Breed. Now I'm gonna beat your head in.
I doubt it.
Nyburn stumbled back. Sam moved forward and busted the man twice. One blow to the mouth, the other to the nose. Nyburn's nose was pushed to one side, and the fractured olfactory squirted blood.
Get out of my bank! You get blood all over everything!
Nyburn stumbled away from the wall and took a wild swing at Sam. Sam sidestepped, stuck out his boot, tripping the man, and Nyburn fell against a depositor's table and went crashing to the floor. Tom Riley and his deputies had appeared, all of them smiling at the scene.
Do something, Marshal! They're gonna wreck my bank!
Who started this?
Nyburn's big mouth.
Nyburn climbed slowly to his boots, his eyes burning wild with hate. Blood from his busted beak ran down his lower jaw. Sam waited patiently, his hands balled into gloved fists. Nyburn rushed Sam, his arms folding around Sam's legs, and both of them went propelling backward, crashing through a big front window of the bank.
My God, you'll pay for that!
Amid a shower of broken glass, both men struggled to their feet and faced each other. Nyburn got in a good lick to Sam's jaw that backed him up. and Nyburn, sensing early victory, pressed in. Bad mistake. Sam planted his boots and gave Nyburn two shots to the head, a left and right to the jaw that staggered the man and sent him stumbling back. By now, everybody inside the bank had moved outside, and Tom's deputies were covering the three bodyguards, the three of them knowing that should they try to interfere with the beating their buddy was taking, the odds were pretty good that would be the last thing they would ever do. They stood grim-faced and watched Sam Two Wolves stomp Nyburn. Nyburn stepped up and flicked a left to Sam's face. Sam brushed it off and didn't fall for the fake. Nyburn tried again, and Sam blasted a right through the opening that caught Nyburn flush in the mouth and knocked him down, flat on his back on the boardwalk. Nyburn was not so quick getting to his feet this time around. He staggered once, caught himself, and looked around him for his buddies. He saw they were effectively blocked from doing anything other than watching.
I'm finishing this once and for all.
Nyburn reached behind him and came up with a knife. Tom stepped quickly out of the crowd just behind the gunfighter and laid a heavy kosh against the man's head.
I'll put up with the fistfight for a time, but not when it gets down to this.
The marshal reached down and picked up the long-bladed knife, running a finger carefully along the blade.
Sharp. All right, boys. Drag him over to the jail and let him cool off.
What about my busted up bank and the broken windows?
Fix it yourself. Or better yet, why don't you board it up and leave town? That way you'd make everybody around here happy.